Okay. Well, it's hot and cold Saturday morning here. What is it? 2 days before Halloween? Something like that. It's Halloween Eve Eve or something like that. And in celebration of the day, we've got Jim Dill here. We're going to talk about spiders and stuff.
Spiders, ticks, bed bugs, yeah. Rats, you name it.
Yeah, you know, we're a little in keeping with the season. I mean, right. It's highly appropriate. So good morning, Jim. I appreciate you coming in.
Good morning, Tom.
It's our usual autumn festivities, although I think this is the first time I recall that we've been this close to Halloween.
I think you're right.
That's wonderful.
Yep.
So let's start out with spiders this week because of the holiday season, so to speak.
Sure. You know, we've actually been getting some calls about spiders. People are questioning, do we have things like the brown recluse? Do we have black widows and things like that, especially the northern black widow? And most of those types of spiders, even though they may be poisonous, they're not really deadly poisonous. Mm-hmm. Like the brown recluse, though, it makes a real mess when it bites you because the tissue just kind of dissolves around the bite. So here's the way to start out this morning, you know.
That's
with
good.
Breakfast.
Well, zombie spider bites is what we got. I like it.
But the black widow that most people think of is the southern black widow. And that has the black spider with the red hourglass on the bottom of it, which, you know, we do get in Maine. I get a lot of calls from grocery stores, and they'll come in on grapes. Mm. And I also get it from...
There go the grapes for me. Okay, keep it going.
And I also get them from construction companies that bring in pipes, culverts and that type of thing from the south that they haul them up.
Sure.
Because those are the type of places where the black widow likes to nest, you know, in cavities and that type of thing. So even though, you know, you got that wind blowing through those pipes, you know, trucking them up from the south, quite a few black widows can come in that way. But for the most part, they don't get established here. And that brings us to the northern black widow, which is established in New England. And the difference between it and the black widow that we normally think of is the hourglass on the bottom is what we call broken. Mm-hmm. Plus, it has some red on its back.
Okay.
Now, it also, its bite is somewhat poisonous. And again, it likes to hang out in outhouses and places like that. So if you have outhouses, you know, and you live in southern Maine, you might want to check before you...
Oh, my goodness.
Do your business, you know, because those are where some of the bites occur.
And really?
Yeah,
oh, my goodness.
So anyway, but it's not established here in Maine that we know of, even though, it, as I say, it's in Vermont, New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. We haven't really found it established here. So it's just an occasional comes in like the other ones, like the southern black widow and the brown recluse.
Another great reason to live in the state of Maine.
That's right.
Man, I tell you, you're doing good this morning.
but you got to figure, though, too, you know, our climate is changing, and it's a little more hospitable now than it used to be. You know, we have shorter winters, not quite as heavy snow and that type of thing, so... things like this have a tendency to move, so we may eventually find some established populations of something like that.
We had in one of the windows in our house on the screen, some spider laid about a bazillion tiny little eggs. And I want to tell you, my wife was just... I was freaked out, too. My wife was freaked out. I was freaked out. And I got rid of them.
Right.
But spider eggs, it's when female spiders lay eggs, sometimes they're like the size of a pea, and then this other time these are really tiny little eggs the size of a pencil point.
Right. What the difference is some spiders will lay actually an egg sac. So what they do is they kind of cover it with their silk, just like what they make their webs out of.
Mm-hmm.
And that encloses like 100 eggs.
Okay.
So the reason it looks the size of a pea, there might be 100 eggs in there or something.
All right.
And then there are other spiders that may lay, you know, elsewhere. They may put them on their backs, you know, because some spiders actually, you'll find them running around with the egg sac on the back of their abdomen. They carry it. In their hind legs, and some will even carry it around in their mouth. So you'll find different types of spiders with those, but some have kind of an individual But most of them, they're kind of a sack. Like, even though you might not notice it, they might lay it flat against a building. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones where you probably see all these little ones coming out all of a sudden. Yeah. So,
yeah. Very, very exciting to see a zillion little spiders.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
Especially when you like spiders, right?
Yeah, everybody loves spiders. Who would not like... Well, last week, I forget what website it was. Somebody had a big enlarged photo of the face of an ant, and it looked pretty cool.
Yeah.
And as an entomologist, you not me, do you get to look a lot of these photographs now that we have that technology?
Yeah.
And it must be fascinating for you to compare and contrast, especially say different species of spiders or ants or whatever,
right,
and see this.
Especially before, you know, everybody has a cell phone with a camera on it. Mm. You know, 95% of our specimens came in, you know, live specimens or dead or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, very seldom did someone, once in a while, you might get a photograph somebody would send in. But now it's the other way around. Probably 85% of the specimens we get is a picture.
Yeah.
Oh, I found this. What is it? And I think people have a tendency with pictures to do that more than they would with a live specimen or a dead specimen. They're sure. not going to pick it up and put it in a vial or something and send it to us. But a picture, snap yeah. it, send it off. What is this?
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's well and good, but you find a caterpillar and it's on your kitchen windowsill. And, you know, for me as an entomologist, that's great, but I have no context sometimes on how big it is, you know, what it might have come from. And all those things help us identify what it is. But, yeah, I'd say probably 85% of our specimens now are photographs.
Yeah. It gives perspective to me as a layperson how fascinating these creatures are.
Right.
And we of course we don't see that because they're so tiny, but the ant face, and please don't send texts and call me stupid, but the ant face looked like it was smiling.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
It was a friendly ant. It wasn't one of those fire ants that bites the hell out of you.
The other side of that is with photos too, though. It's just like you said, they're very tiny, and sometimes people do that. They take the picture of it, it's just a little pinpoint, and that's what they send us. You know, what is this? And so two things: one, it's just a little pinpoint, and it's out of focus.
Yeah.
So
that helps you.
Yeah. So we really don't mind. We you know, it's nice when you send us photos and that type of thing, but all we ask is that you try to be as good at taking the picture as you can be.
I've struggled. I send Jim at least one photo a year, if not a couple, and struggle to get them in focus,
right,
because it is challenging because they're so small and the phone will try to focus on whatever
right
it thinks you're taking the picture of, not that little speck that's there. So, well, I'll tell you what, it's 8:15. Let's take a quick break. We're here with Jim Dillmar, our favorite entomologist, and we will be right back.
Well, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow. You know I'm trying to please to the calling of your heartstrings that play soft and low. You know the night magic seem to whisper and hush. You know the soft moonlight seems to shine in your blush. Can I just have one more dance with you, my love?
The monster mash.
He did the mash.
With my arm and flash.
He
K19 Hot and Cold Saturday morning. We got Jim Dill with us. We're talking about spiders and stuff. And I got a message here. What about flying spiders? They don't really fly, do they? They jump.
Well, there's two or three different ways that they look at it on flying spiders. One is you do have a jumping spider, and those don't jump very far, but they do jump around a little bit. Mm-hmm. But the term flying spider came from this some actual spiders that what they do is ballooning. And that's when they come down on their silks, especially smaller spiders, and they just blow in the wind. Okay. But some larger ones will do the same thing. They just come down and they wait for a wind current, and that's how they disperse. So they catch on wind currents and those balloon threads, and out they go, and then pretty soon they land on wherever and start whatever they want to do at that place.
Okay. So let's segue into ticks, because that's an arachnid too, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. So I've had the experience. I avoid tick areas like the plague. and to the degree, and I hate to admit this, but I did it because of ticks, partially because of ticks. In back at where I have my business, in back of my shop, there was a wooded area. I had a neighbor cutting it over for firewood, and somebody had dug a trench to maybe harvest gravel that never was very good. So it appeared like we could backfill everything. So I've got this nice big bare area now. No ticks. But here's the thing. I have been, I've marched around bad. I'm not afraid to go in the woods that much, but I'm always kind of looking over everything, make sure I have no ticks on me. I have been out back and come literally 5 minutes. I'm out back and I'm back on pavement and I've got a tick on my shoulder. Now, is that because it's windborne? I mean, it was a customer said, "Oh, you have a tick on your shoulder." I'm like, are they windborne? I mean, or they're not falling out of trees because they don't usually quest in trees, do they?
No. I thought you were going to say you had a chip on your shoulder, but instead you got a tick on your shoulder.
I have a chip, too. That's the other shoulder, but that's another story.
Ticks quest, and usually they do it fairly low to the ground. Hmm. And part of the reason they do it low to the ground, especially the deer tick or black-legged tick, which is what you're finding out now out and about, they are very sensitive to drying out. So, of course, when it's hot and dry or whatever, they spend their time down in the duff.
Sure.
And then when they need to find a host, they'll crawl up a blade of grass, a twig, a stick, or whatever. So usually we figure they're pretty much from your knee down is about as high as they get.
Yeah.
Because otherwise they get up there and all of a sudden it starts getting a little windy and it's dry. It can kill them in a hurry, and they don't have the opportunity, if they were up in a tree, to scurry all the way down back to the duff. So no, they quest fairly low to the ground. But I will tell you, once they get on you, they can move really fast.
Okay.
So that's probably what it is. You might have got it on your leg. And since there's no skin there, they're moving fast to try to find skin so that, they can get a meal.
Okay.
And he was almost got you. He was almost to your neck.
Almost there.
So, wonderful. Yeah. So they do. And right now, as I mentioned, it is tick season again. It's always tick season in Maine. We have ticks sent in 12 months of the year.
I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah. But, certainly during December through March, we just get, two or three a week or something.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, we're getting about 50 a day.
Wow.
And it's the adult black-legged tick, deer tick. And they're out questing, feeding, and we're getting a lot. So I would certainly remind people to be on the lookout for them. It is hunting season. So hunters, this is right yesterday and today is youth season, the 2 days for youth season. So people are going to be out wandering around, and then next weekend they are too. And so always be on the lookout for ticks. This time of year, of course, you're not going to be wearing light-colored clothing, in the woods, so you can see the ticks. But the bright orange, they show up on pretty well too. So, yeah.
So but, how's the season been for the year? Excuse me, has it been more than normal or average?
We had a little lull in the summer. We always have a lull in the summer, because it's the nymphs and the larval ticks that we have in the summer. But this year, it was. For some reason, we didn't have a huge number coming in. But early in the season, there was. And as I say, right now, it is. And we get about the same number of ticks in. It seems we're kind of stable somewhere around 5,500 to 6,000 ticks a year that we get in for testing.
Okay.
And so, you know, and every now and then we get one in that when we test it, it has a triple threat. It has a babesiosis, anaplasmosis, and Lyme disease in it. So you let the person know and they say, wow, I won the trifecta, I guess.
Yeah. Are those showing up in a specific region of the state or just anywhere?
No, they can be anywhere. It just depends on the larval ticks feeding on the rodents and other small mammals. That's where they pick the disease organisms up from. Mm-hmm. So it depends on what type of animals are around and if they have the organisms in them. And that's where the larval ticks pick it up. And then it continues then throughout its entire life cycle as it feeds on other things and, of course, feeds on humans.
And if we map out the population, put you on the spot here, if you map out tick population over the state, more intense southern Maine than northern Maine?
Southern coastal is certainly more intense, more ticks. And the further north and west you get as far as the dog tick and the black-legged tick, there's fewer numbers, but they're there, and we've had Lyme disease from all. And right now, you know, we got some research projects going where we're sampling ticks aggressively, actually, out in the field. And we're also collecting small mammals and take a little ear snip and then let them go, and we test the mammals for organisms. And what we're trying to do is trying to establish which type of small mammal it may be the most serious carrier of these. Mm-hmm. You know, is it the white-footed mouse? Is it a chipmunk? Is it a red squirrel or what?
Right.
So, yeah.
What about the vaccine? What's going on with that?
Yeah, they're still working on a vaccine. It was being tested. I actually think that it may have been tested here in Maine. I was told that it was, but it's still not on the market yet. And that's only for Lyme disease. And so, you know, because we said, vaccine, we don't have to test anymore. But, you know, people don't necessarily like vaccines anyway. A lot of people don't. So will people get vaccinated for Lyme disease if it's available? I'm sure a lot of people will, depending on what they do or, you know, if they spend a lot of time in the woods and that type of thing. but they are still working on it. But as I say, we've already got the other diseases. And plus, we have a virus, Powassan virus. And we did have a person die earlier this year from Powassan virus from a tick bite. So.
When it comes to animals, dogs, cats, we do have treatments, either collars or something that they eat that will protect them for a period of time.
Right. I mean, they have lots of different types of things. Yes, you got, you know, flea and tick collars. You can put one spot on. You can put powders on the pets and that type of thing to prevent that. Also, they have vaccines for horses and for dogs for Lyme disease. Mm-hmm. They don't so much for cats because cats don't seem, if they get Lyme disease, they're asymptomatic. It doesn't seem to do much to them. Okay. So they don't really have any vaccine for cats.
Okay.
And so, yep, you know, and we certainly recommend if you have a horse or a dog to get them vaccinated, talk to your vet, make sure that they are, because they're certainly going to come in contact with the ticks. And
yeah.
And we're just waiting to see what's, you know, knocking on our door for other ticks. You know, like the Lone Star tick and the red meat allergy. And then there's another one. There's a longhorn tick, they call it. And it has a meningitis associated with it. So there are a lot of things kind of knocking on our door, moving our way.
I'm getting myself a tick collar. That's what I'm going to do. We got to take a quick break here. We'll be back a little bit. It is hot and cold. It is Saturday morning. Jim Dill's with us, and we ain't done yet. There's a lot more critters to talk about. Excuse me, Bob. Bob, it's time to talk to Chelsea at Bangor Humane Society. Good morning, Chelsea.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. How are things going over there?
It's really wonderful. We've got a lot of really wonderful animals here, and we actually have an event, and it's the last day today, so we'll definitely talk about that.
Yeah.
And talk about a few of our wonderful animals that we have. To start, we're going to talk about a dog, and she's so, so sweet. Her name is Norma, and she is a very active and spirited gal looking for her forever family. Now, her second attempt at finding her family, no fault of her own, and she's ready to find a partner who can participate in her energetic lifestyle. She does have a very playful demeanor, and she can be a bit dog selective. So we always conduct a dog-to-dog introduction here at the shelter to ensure everyone gets along. While we don't have a whole lot of history on how she does with cats, she might be prone to chasing. So we do strongly recommend maybe dog-savvy felines with a safe space to call their own and doing those very slow, positive introductions. While we haven't observed her with kiddos, we think Norma's bubbly and bouncy nature is best suited for dog-savvy children, probably 10 and older. She's a very strong lady, and she needs ample time to unwind and adjust to her new family. Lots of exercise, maybe a long walk on the beach. She loves that. And playful activities that she absolutely loves. Treats are definitely the way to her heart. Me too. We definitely connect on that portion. She is known to enjoy a little wanderlust, so keeping her in an enclosed space or on a leash until she's ready for that training will be really smart, because, again, she really loves the outside and ample amount of time to run. She's a fantastic hiking partner, running, or walking partner for somebody patient and dedicating to helping her thrive in her new home environment. Now, we do open today from 12 to 6 p.m., and as I talked about a little bit earlier, we do have, today's our last day for this event, and we're going to get right into that. So in partnership with Quirk Subaru, we received a really generous grant from the ASPCA that will help offset the cost of adoption preparations so we can get those animals into their homes faster.
Wow.
Now, we've been doing this. Yes, I know. So exciting. We've been doing this all week long, and today is the last day. So definitely come in for that 50% off the adoption fee special. We are also celebrating by filling the Forester with Quirk, which is a huge thank you to Quirk Subaru and the ASPCA for making this happen. So even if you're not able to adopt today, we can still use those generous donations that people bring for us all the time, and we're so thankful for all of our partnerships that we have. Another partnership, which has been a really busy week for us this week. We don't want to forget about PetSmart. It's PetSmart's National Adoption Week. We've had a wonderful partnership with them as well, PetSmart in Bangor, for many years to help find animals there for every family. And we do have a few sweet cats and a small animal over there, too. So lots going on, but really wonderful things and finding those amazing animals there for every families, and we know they're out there.
That's great. And hats off to Quirk for doing that. That is absolutely wonderful. And
and the ASPCA, and we're so thankful for both of them. And they're amazing.
That is cool. So open at noon to 6. This is the last day for 50% off on adoption fees.
Yes.
Wow.
Come on in.
Yeah. Wonderful. Chelsea, thank you for taking the time. We will talk to you again real soon.
Sounds perfect. Okay. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right, and I got to hit the magic buttons there, do that. And then we talked to Jim Dill, our favorite entomologist over in Studio 7A or B or whatever one it is, whatever Rick's calling it this week. And I have to comment, this has nothing to do with anything we're talking about. I tuned in the station last week, and Rick commented on the fact there's a new light in the bathroom. And I want to tell you, I have those lenses that tint. They start to tint. It's so bright in there. I guess when you leave that bathroom, you're going to be clean, if nothing else. So there are no bugs in there, that's for sure. So let's see. Where do we leave off, Jim?
Well, one thing we can start with is, since we're just talking about dogs, we could talk a little bit about fleas.
Yes, okay.
Well, you know, and the reason why I want to mention fleas is, of course, if you get fleas on your pet, everybody knows, you know, you talk to your vet. There's lots of different treatments, from flea collars to powders to liquids to oral medicine to give them. But what happens if you get an infestation in the house? And fleas can be kind of hard to get rid of. Mm-hmm. They're kind of interesting from the standpoint of, if you have a heavy load on your pets, the fleas, of course, lay their eggs right on the dog or the cat. And as the dog or cat walks around or lays down or whatever, the eggs fall off.
Yeah.
So they could be anywhere in your house. And when those eggs hatch, they turn into a little, almost looks like a little teeny tiny caterpillar type of a larvae. And they feed on anything that's organic, dead skin cells from the animals or whatever. So they might be on your carpet or in your carpet or in the cracks and crevices of a hardwood floor. And at this point in time, you know, there's not a lot that you're going to see of them. You're not going to know they're there necessarily. But the interesting thing is, the next stage, they pupate just like a butterfly or anything would. And they make a little cocoon. And that cocoon can last for months. And what happens is they stay there until there's some vibration. So if you walk by them, that kind of like wakes them up, and they immediately will come out of the cocoon.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why sometimes what happens in apartments and stuff, you move in, and the person before you had a pet, and you may not have pets, and you come into this house or apartment or whatever, and in a couple of days, you got fleas everywhere, and you're saying, where did these come from?
Wow.
But they're pretty easily controllable. A couple things I recommend folks to do is just to wear some white athletic socks and pull them up. And you walk around, and you just have a little cup with some water and detergent, and you just watch, because they'll jump on to those socks. You pick them off and just put them in the detergent and water, which kills them. But what this does, this concentrates your efforts on knowing what rooms they're in or where they're the heaviest.
Mm-hmm.
Then I recommend you just go back to the vet, and they actually have sprays that you can spray your house with. But what they are is they're a growth regulator, and all they impact are fleas. It's fine on pets and humans and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have an infestation in your home, that's the way to
get to them. Now, is the flea also an arachnid or no?
Is the what from what
the flea is not an arachnid, the flea.
No,
it's a different creature.
It's an insect.
Okay, so but one of the things when it comes to fleas and ticks, because we've been talking about those are hard to kill. If you can't just squeeze them between two fleshy points of your finger, you have to maybe have two fingernails together to really kill them.
And fleas, and part of the reason why fleas are so hard to kill, they're flattened side to side, where most insects are kind of top to bottom flattened.
Right.
Fleas are side to side.
Yeah.
So as you squeeze them, you're just pressing on the sides, and it doesn't do anything.
They're thinking they're getting a massage.
Yeah, right. So that's why you're right. You have to kind of cut them in half with your fingernails, or as I say, drown them in a little, water and detergent.
Well, that sounds like a fun thing to do.
It does.
Let's move in the new place. Now we're going to put in some white socks and walk around like a what? I don't know.
Yeah, walk, just walk around. See if we got fleas.
Let's go flea hunting.
Yep. So.
Okay.
So all kinds of little tricks.
Yeah, but we ain't even started yet. Somebody. Had a comment here about Lyme disease.
Yep.
And the fact that if you suspect you have Lyme disease, it can take several tests before it shows up. And why is that? Is it just because it's maybe not developed enough, or not enough load in the person's body to show up?
Yes, and the organism is a spirochete that is the Lyme disease organism. And it's very difficult to detect. And what they do is they'll do a blood test. And it may not always be in the blood, because the spirochete is like a little corkscrew.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it will just kind of get into the tissue and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you just take a blood sample, it may or may not be active in the blood at the time. And it's just one of those organisms that is very difficult to detect. And they're right. It may take two or three tests to determine if you have it.
Okay, so here's the thing. This is the million-dollar idea right now, okay? I was joking about putting on a flea tick collar. How about, for human beings, ankle collars, one on each leg, because that's where they show up. And you put, especially if you're a hunter or you're out working in the woods or out in your yard and you know there's ticks around, it'd be nice if somebody had something like that. I mean, you can treat your clothing with pyrethrins, but that may or may not be active. I guess if you spray right before you go out. But I just, I'm kind of surprised that there's not a more aggressive market marketing for something to help mitigate this for folks.
There kind of is. I'll get back to your exact example in a second, but what happens is you can buy their leggings, and you've probably seen them in the area of the country where there's a lot of snakes. They have these leggings that are from like the ankle to the knee, so that if a snake goes to bite, they hit this heavy leather. And
right.
So they have the same type of thing for ticks that is already impregnated with an insecticide, most likely permethrin, and they're kind of a, I guess, sort of like a burlap feel to them, so that the ticks can get onto them, but they kind of stick there too. Mm-hmm. So as they're trying to maneuver around, they're easy to see and they're light in color, so you can pick them off.
Okay.
So they already have something like that. Now, back to your question about putting a flea collar on your ankles, the problem becomes is the way the flea collar works is it does get all over the body of the cat or the dog.
Mm.
It slowly is released. And most humans do not want to expose their bodies to
insecticide,
pesticide, like that.
Yeah.
So that's the reason. Because, there's been talks about, can we just take a pill and, it's going to kill anything that feeds on me, a mosquito or a tick or whatever. Mm. Well, yeah, you could, but what's that going to do to you? And I think part of the reason is why people feel it's okay to give it to the cat or the dog their lifespan compared to ours and exposure is a lot shorter. So, you know, they only live, most of them, maybe anywhere from 10 to 20 years versus a human, which is, you know, 60 to 90 or something.
Plus, so, if you put one on your kid and you hurt or somebody and you kill them, you're in big trouble.
Right, yeah. Right.
All right.
So that's the main reason why they don't do that for humans. All right.
I understand.
So there goes your million-dollar
There's my million-dollar idea right
Sorry.
There. excuse me. Text message, when did the tick population explode in Maine? I'm 65 and never saw any ticks when I was growing up. I didn't either.
Now, it's been one of those things that I had never seen them growing up. And I have worked at the University of Maine since 1981. And when I first started there, you know, if we got one tick in a year, that was like, oh, wow, look, a tick. And it was almost always a dog tick.
Sure.
And I would say it was probably started picking up in the mid-90s to around 2000. Mm-hmm. Southern Maine had a lot more of them, of course. And they've just expanded since then.
Right.
And now, pretty much through our area here, they're everywhere.
Well, I'm trying to think. It was in the 70s. I worked in the woods.
Yeah.
And at lunchtime, I would take a nap.
Yeah.
I put the pack down on the ground, and I closed my eyes for 10, 15 minutes. I never saw a tick on me. I was in the woods, you know, 8-10 hours a day, 5 days a week. And plus lived in the woods, you know, had a wooded backyard and never, ever, I, you know, never saw a tick. And when I did see one, it was pretty exciting.
Yeah. And I mean, I grew up in Southern Maine and I too, as a kid, you know, wandered all through the woods, crawled and spent all my time there and never saw a tick.
Yeah.
No.
Well, so we've got about, do we have enough? Okay. So the question is, what caused it?
Well, that's kind of one of those debates on, part of it is there's been a migration of animals in and out of the state. One of the things that is a possibility, some of them may have started coming in, you know, on a bird or something and get dropped off. And that's one of the things that we think about with the Lone Star tick. We get Lone Star ticks in every year. Yet we haven't been able to find an established population. Like if you called me up and said, you know, sent me in a tick, then I'd probably send some of the folks or come out myself to your house and say, Tom, do you mind if we look around and drag for ticks and stuff? Because we want to see if there's an established population.
Yeah.
And when we've done that, we haven't been able to usually find any others. So somehow they're getting here and they haven't established. But I think what has happened, the same type of thing happened with other ticks. And as I said earlier, the climate has changed so that we now have a much longer summer, if you would, spring and fall mostly, and milder winters. So because of that, they've managed to survive and move around quite readily on deer and any other animal. Because a buck especially, I mean, it can move for miles and miles. So if they've got, you know, ticks on them and they're dropping off, one deer could move ticks for a huge amount of area.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what has happened. So it's been a combination of, you know, animals and climate and that type of thing. And with the climate being the way it is, the ticks have been able to establish and explode.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, and people always say, well, was it because of the introduction of turkeys?
Yeah.
And then also then someone else will say, well, gee, I don't have any because the turkeys eat them all.
Yeah.
Or chickens or guinea fowl or whatever. Yeah. And my answer to that always is, yes, they will eat ticks. And they do a good job of grooming themselves. So if they get a tick on them, you know, they're going to get off. But if they happen to get them where they can't groom them off of themselves, then they're going to move them around pretty easily, too. So could migratory birds and stuff or even turkeys move ticks around? A little bit, probably.
So that really is possible with almost any animal in the forest. But I think you've said in the past, a lot of tick movement is on rodents.
Yes, yes. And part of it is, you know, the tick itself doesn't move very much. Mm. You know, once it drops off, it stays there and it looks for a host and, you know, it says, huh, nothing around today. I think I'll, you know, walk down the road here a quarter of a mile and, yep. and check again. They don't do that. You know, they'll move a few feet one way or the other from where they drop off on an animal. And if they don't find a host, they're toast.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. We got our driveway paved at work for one of the reasons was for ticks. Not that we had, but tick a lot, but every so often somebody would come in because there'd be a little grass here or there that was growing with a tick on them. And we'd only been in the driveway, right where you see where, if you're at my ever at my place business, where the pavement is. Like, what the heck is this? You know? So it's paved. Then we went out back, cleared it out.
There you go.
We'll show them. Damn ticks ain't going to get on Gosey. Already have. We got to take a break. Jim Dill is going to be here for a second hour. We really still haven't started. I mean, we still got a lot of stuff. There's so many disgusting creatures wanting to suck our blood. No more appropriate day than this weekend. So, anyway, we'll be back a little bit with Jim Dill for hour number two.
Brothers, sisters, listen to what we say. Moaning and groaning won't drive those blues away. Lift up your voices and song. You know you've all done wrong, you sinners. Drop everything. Let the harmony ring up to heaven. Sing, you sinners. Just wave your arms all about. Let the Lord hear you shout. Pour the music right out. Sing, you sinner. Whenever there's music, the devil kicks. He don't allow music by the river Styx. You're wicked and you're depraved, and you all misbehave. If you want to be saved, sing, you sinner. Well, up until now, we've been asking everybody to sing. But if you won't sing, come on, dance. Go, man, swing. Go. Yeah. Swing, swing. Bop, 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 da, do, da. Swing, 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 you sinner. Whenever there's music, the devil kicks. Oh, he don't allow music by the river Styx. You're wicked and you're depraved, and you've all misbehaved. Oh, if you wanna be saved, if you wanna be saved, I'll sing, you sinner.
Daylight come and me want go home. Work all night and I drink a rum.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Stack banana till the morning come.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Come, Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana.
You know, I just realized, if you're not familiar, this is from the movie Beetlejuice, and Beetlejuice, and we're talking Beatles now.
There we go.
Yeah, we got Jim Dill here, and we're talking critters. We're talking bugs primarily, and a couple of text messages came in, Jim. Let's just run through them real quick. Somebody said the Iceman that a guy who was found on the glacier tested for Lyme disease?
I vaguely heard something about that. Yeah. I don't know either.
I'm just going by the way they came in. Black and orange caterpillars crossing the street this time of year. Where are they going? They're going to Walmart. What do you mean?
To get to the other side?
Yeah, to get
course.
The Halloween costumes. They're black and orange.
Yeah, those are woolly bears.
Okay.
Very common. And it's one of those things that people, if you look up a woolly bear, people talk about being able to forecast the winter by the width of that black stripe.
Okay.
So, we actually had one of the entomologists study him for like 4 or 5 years to see if there truly was any correlation.
Yeah.
And of course, there wasn't. It's all genetic from, you know, the parents, I guess, if you would. But what they're doing now is they've fully fed, and they're looking for a place to pupate.
Okay.
So they're moving around. They've left the grasses and stuff that they feed on, and looking for a place to pupate. And they'll spend the winter in the pupa
and
come out.
Are their hairs irritating
no.
to humans?
No. Nope.
Okay.
No. Those are kind of one of those caterpillars that everybody picks up because they curl up into a little ball when you pick them up and. Yeah, fun to play with.
I don't pick them up because I don't remember which ones are the bad ones that I used to, but I'm not going to do that anymore. Let's see. Tick prevention. Is there any way to help moose with their ticks? Is some sort of tranquilizer tick prevention?
Well, that's...
Tranquilizer gun.
Yeah, that's interesting. We've had lots of folks talk to us about that because for... Tick prevention on deer and mice, you probably seen these contraptions that a deer feed in where they put their head down to get some grain and it rubs across a rubbing wick mm-hmm. that has a pesticide in it and it treats the deer. Mm-hmm. So that gets rid of the ticks off them deer.
Yeah.
And mice, they put out little containers that have treated cotton balls. And the mice grab a cotton ball and take it back to their nest and line the nest with it. And it kills the ticks on the mice. But unfortunately, moose aren't easily attracted to a feeding station. So that's out. So then the next thing is what this person suggested. Could you use a dart gun? We've had actually people as well as a dart gun. What we actually talked about was paintball guns.
Mm.
Because when you splat it on the side of it, number one, you know that it already has been treated because it leaves paint behind and would put on a certain amount of ivermectin or whatever they wanted to use. The problem becomes with that, we figured we'd have thousands of volunteers of people wanting to go out and shoot moose with paintball guns. But again, you're only going to hit such a small, small population of the moose that, that would be feasible.
But maybe you're not thinking this through enough. If you made this a program... And the fact that you get to go shoot moose, not kill them, but you hit them with a paintball, and then you get the joy of running away when the moose gets mad at you for making an orange spot on its side.
Exactly right.
But good concept. Another message here, I believe we stopped burning fields and yards. This is when the tick explosion started. Certainly burning the field will knock down the tick population.
Well, it would, but you got to figure that for the most part, especially with the deer tick, they're on the edge of the field at the wood line. They're not out in the middle of that field.
Okay.
Dog ticks, yes, they have a tendency to be out a little further because they're a little hottier than the deer tick.
Mm-hmm.
So if you burn the field, yes, I suppose if it burned it right up to the edge of the woods and you didn't set the woods on fire, then it might be helpful.
Well, the other part of that, though, too, is once it's burned, all the little rodents and stuff are running back and forth. We don't see them, but they're always there.
Right, right.
And they're going to start dropping ticks again.
Right,
but
right.
That environment would be hotter and drier for a while till it starts
for a while.
But it's going to, boom, explode into growth again.
Yep.
But, okay, let's see. Another one. we'll not go there. That's If Pete's for governor, he can eradicate ticks. Pete, my son, is running for governor on this show. So,
right.
Anyway, all right. So that covers all that. So the other thing we wanted to touch on was bed bugs. Did you?
We lost the.
You can't hear me? Hello? You hear me, Jim?
I can now.
Okay.
Yep.
High quality.
Yeah.
Loose wires. The bed bugs.
Yeah, it's been interesting. Probably the last month and a half, I've probably had at least a call a week.
Really?
And, you know, back 7 or 8 years ago when we were on the show, I mean, I'd be getting 4 or 5 calls a week. And,
yeah.
I mean, it was huge numbers. And then it really, really dropped off. But the last probably, as I say, 5 or 6 weeks, I've had a call a week, which is a high number for where it has been. So I don't know that it's necessarily rearing its ugly head again. I hope not. But bed bugs, they're just difficult to get rid of. Once you get them in your home, just because there's so many places for them to hide. And if you live in an apartment complex, I mean, they basically have to treat the whole complex. Because if you've got them in your apartment, once you treat your apartment, they have a tendency to move out into the neighboring apartments or vice versa. You may not have them now, but if your neighbor did and, you know, they treat, some of them would come through on the pipes or through any cracks or crevices on the walls or baseboard, and they move freely back and forth. So
nice.
So they are you know, starting to show up again. I'm hoping it's just a blip, and we'll see. Because as I say, they're very difficult to get rid of. They often will use heat treatment to get rid of them rather than an insecticide. Some folks use insecticides. Some use a combination. And you know, I don't hear much of it anymore. Again, back at the height of it, they had bed bug sniffing dogs.
Yeah.
That they'd bring into your apartment, your house, or whatever, and the dog would sniff around and tell you if you had bed bugs by sitting down or laying down, depending on what the dog would do.
Well, the bed bugs have decided that, you know, let's fake them out and go down, be quiescent for a while, and then all the dogs go away, and they got to train a whole new batch of dogs, and you know how that goes.
Right.
And it takes a while. It
takes a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about the most famous, bestest pest, for this time of year, and that is, I'm not going to tell you. You're going to have to come back. It's just wait and see. We'll be right back.
The internet said I had passed away. If I died, I wasn't dead to stay. I woke up still not dead again today.
All right. 9:18, hot and cold Saturday morning. Jim Dill's with us. And the big tease for the big bug of the season, forget about the ticks. Forget about the spiders. Forget about the caterpillars. Let's talk Japanese lady beetle.
Cute little ladybugs.
Yeah, so to speak.
Yep. The official name is the multicolored Asian lady beetle.
Okay.
And, but interestingly, another name for it is the Halloween beetle.
How appropriate.
And we'll get into that in a minute. But the multicolored Asian lady beetle, at this time of year is looking for a place to overwinter. And evidently in its native habitat in Asia, it often would, actually hibernate or spend the winter over winter on the sides of cliffs, which were, you know, rather grayish in color, lots of cracks and crevices. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the reason that they seem to be attracted to the sides of especially light-colored houses, because it's, to them, a natural place to spend the winter. And, of course, most of us do not have houses that are tight enough that would keep them out, which is about the only thing that you can do to keep them out. But that's what they're doing. They're coming to the side of your house, especially on a nice, bright, sunny day. There can literally be hundreds on the side of a house. And I've had people call where there truly were thousands in their house. So they are a good thing from the standpoint of they eat aphids, and aphids are a plant pest, and it can be a very serious plant pest if you have a garden or just ornamentals or whatever. And they eat more than their weight in a day of aphids, so they're a very good predator. But this time of year, they're a huge nuisance. Mm. Coming into the houses, they do have a kind of what we called hemolymph, which is like their blood. And when you disturb them, they release a little bit of it, and it's kind of yellow in color. It does have a slight odor to it. It's a defensive mechanism, but also in a house, it can stain, you know, curtains or, you know, upholstery or anything. So that's one of the things, you know, just don't disturb them on there. People ask what to do about them. As I say, to keep them out, you can, you know, try to seal the cracks and crevices. Best time to do that is during the summer, because if you start doing it now, you're sealing them in, and then when it gets warm in the spring, they are going to be trying to find a way out, and the only way out may be actually in, so you end up getting more of them in your house. But I would recommend that you try to do that if you've had a problem with these lady beetles in the past. And as I said, they're also called the Halloween lady beetle. And part of that is mostly because it's the time of year. Mm-hmm. You know, it's Halloween time, it's October, that's when they're active. And Tom and I was discussing it on the break. I mean, it is almost Halloween, and they seem to be a little later this year. And I said, I think that's because we've had a strange October weather-wise, that it's been warmer a lot longer. But the reason I like to call them the Halloween beetle is because it has many disguises. Normally, when you look at a ladybug, they're named by the spots on them. It might be the five-spotted lady beetle or the two-spotted or the twice-stabbed or something like that.
Yeah.
But with the multicolored, it's just that. They can be from almost just a light orangey color with no spots to having large spots to having small spots to being very red with spots. So they have these various disguises or costumes, if you would. Hence the name multicolored, but the Halloween part fits with all the costumes that they wear.
Well, I'm going to offer another common name.
Okay, all right.
The energy auditor beetle, because if you've got that many bugs in your house, you need to tighten up your house.
Right,
and you don't have to pay for an energy audit if the Japanese or Asian beetles are in your house. You know what's going on. Get the caulking gun. Get the can of foam. And have at it around windows, in particular basements and stuff.
Exactly.
You know, I as I've done renovations over the years, if I remove clapboards, they're always up in there, and you'll get bathed in them. And they're, of course, they're dead. They got up there and died over the winter, but there'd be, you know, hundreds of them.
Right.
Given you know, whatever house I was working on, I think it depended a lot on the color of the house, as you said. You know, they really do like lighter colored buildings.
Yeah. Well, as well as those, the other thing that we should mention this time of year, there's a lot of critters that want to come in October.
Hmm.
You got the lady beetle, and that's probably the more common one that people think of, and mainly because there's such huge numbers of them.
Right.
But there's probably two or three others that come in. One's a stink bug they have a tendency to come in overwinter. The other one that comes in this time of year is the western conifer seed bug, which looks sort of like a stink bug. It's long. It's usually slow moving, gangly legs. It's, usually see them crawling up the wall, and people will freak out and see this thing because it's, you know, 3/4 of an inch long, yep, or more. So it's a good, yep, size insect. Yep. So people freak out about it. But the other one that we have problems with too is cluster flies. And cluster flies, people say, oh, look at that. It's one of those crazy flies because maybe a light on your ceiling or something. You got this fly or maybe several flies, and all they're doing is bopping off the wall around that light. And those are cluster flies. Again, in October, they do the same thing. They look for cracks and crevices to come in. So basically, you know, to sealing up those cracks and crevices is a good thing. But as Tom pointed out on energy, you know, if you think about it, a fly's fairly small and ladybugs are pretty small. But if you're getting a lot of conifer seed bugs, which are an inch long and 1/4 of an inch wide, you must have some pretty good
openings. You got trouble in River City,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, you got some pretty good size openings there, yeah, for them to squeeze through to get into your, yeah, house. But the cluster fly is kind of an interesting critter because if you have a lot of nice grassy area around your house, nice lawns and stuff, okay, you may have problems with cluster flies because the larvae of the fly is parasitic on earthworms. Mm-hmm. So if you got this nice grassy area outside, the flies are there because they've laid eggs on an area where the earthworms will come in contact with them. Then they develop on the earthworm, and then come fall, out they come, and they're looking for a place to overwinter, and which they do, and then they come out in the spring, mate, and lay their eggs. So, you know, if you got a nice lawn, you might have cluster flies.
Energy auditor flies we have, too, now.
Yeah, too.
Got a message here. After having Asian lady beetles infestations in the spring and fall so bad here some years that I've had to shovel them out my back porch, out of my back porch, with a snow shovel. Finally discovered Harris Asian lady beetle spray, which you spray on your window and door sills inside and out, and within a few days they're completely gone. Hooray. You can get it on Amazon and it works great.
Yeah, you can spray the outside of your house. Mm. There are a lot of different materials out there that's labeled for that. And it's just that, yes, if you're getting that number of beetles in, you might want to do something. As Tom pointed out, your probably best thing to do is do some, you know, crack and crevice treatments first to seal them up. But you can. It's just that, you know, other than a nuisance, I just feel it's kind of spraying a pesticide when you don't really, really need to over the side of your house. But sure, but certainly you can, and it's legal to do that, and it does take care of them.
Sure. It sounds to me like this was probably a closed-in porch. That would be a little more right, porous and understandable.
Right.
But man, if I got a snow shovel to get rid of them, I'm not. I don't know. I know it's not an arachnid issue. I'll never use the outhouse again. But can you ask Jim about gnat infestations? Would we be considering a gnat to be a fruit fly type critter or different critter?
Well, you've got two different things as gnats. Probably if they've got a gnat infestation in their house, it's probably the dark-winged fungus gnat.
Okay.
And they're, yep, going to come from one of two areas. One is if you've got a lot of house plants, and, you know, as you keep watering and watering, you, mm-hmm, get mold, fungus growing on the, yep, surface of the plant soil, as most of us do have a tendency to, sure, overwater. Or if you have maybe some leaky areas and around a window or something, you can get the same type of a thing. You get a little bit of mold growing in the corner of a windowsill that you don't even notice. And it doesn't take very much of this fungus for the larvae to feed on and to develop. So if you do have these little black, quote, fungus gnats hopping around in your house, and they do have a tendency to kind of hop around and flit around, very soft body, very easy to kill. You know, people just with their finger and it's gone. It's not, yeah, like a fruit fly. When you get near it, it's gone.
Yeah.
But that's where you want to be looking. You look at your plants. And the best thing to do is just let your plants dry out. If that's where they're coming from, just let it dry, because as the plant dries, then that fungus dries up and dies, and therefore the larvae have nothing left to feed on.
Which I know you would use soapy water for aphids. Would that do anything for...
Probably. You have to be careful just from the standpoint of would it be any concern to your plant.
Right.
You can get an actual material which is called Natrol, and what it is, it's a bacteria, and you can just get some of that at your local big box store or whatever, and you just spray that on the soil surface too, and that will take care of the larvae.
Okay. All right, we got to take a break. It is 9:30, just on time. We'll be right back. It is Hot and Cold Saturday morning, Halloween week. Is it Halloween? We're building up to something there? I don't know. Anyway, we'll be right back. Back 9:36. It is hot and cold. It is, Jim Dill is over there in Studio 7A, I think, and we should have a number there so I know what the hell I'm talking about.
And yeah, 7A, we're I see it on the door.
Is it 7A?
Yeah.
Okay, I got it right. I hear it, but then I'm not sure. So no text messages at 601-207-4478. What haven't we touched on, Jim?
Well, a couple things I want to mention. One is I want to quickly go back to the winter tick, which is the moose tick.
Yeah.
And it's interesting from the standpoint of, I don't know if we mentioned that, you know, of course a moose can have tens of thousands of ticks on them.
Yeah.
You know, and be these big size of a grape almost hanging off in a moose. And of course, it causes them some real problems, especially the younger moose during the winter. But the thing I wanted to talk about is we are doing some research at the university on them, and we're surveying for them. And they're interesting from the standpoint when we've talked about all the other ticks. They're individuals. They're out there, they're questing, and you know, you get one tick on you and another and another and another. But with the winter tick, when the female lays her eggs and they hatch in the fall, they all kind of stay together. So what happens as usually as a moose walks by, they're all in a clump, and they may be on raspberries or wherever the tick laid its eggs. Mm-hmm. And one tick will grab on to the moose as it goes by, and all the other ticks grab on to the one next to them. So instead of just bringing one tick along, you bring a chain of maybe 300 ticks from that egg mass onto that moose. Ugh. So that's how they get such a huge, huge wow. load on them. And the reason why I wanted to bring this up partially is I wanted to tell you a funny story. Of course, hunters this time of the year, in October, they're out, especially bird hunting, and they'll be walking through a patch of raspberries or whatever, and they'll get them on them, and same thing. They'll look down, and they'll have hundreds of these tiny ticks on them. Now, most of them have realized by now, a lot of the hunters has been out for a while, that they don't do anything to you. They just kind of drop off because they don't even really bite you, the winter tick. It's just, you know, you don't smell good, I guess, or taste good. So they don't get on you. So we had this one guy that did this, and he called us on a Monday morning, and he said this happened to him on a Saturday morning. He was out hunting, and he got hundreds and hundreds of these ticks all over him. He said so he just went running to his truck, took all of his clothes off, put them in a pile, burned them.
Oh my God.
Burned them. He drove home in his underwear. He said as soon as he got home, he had one of those bombs, insecticide bombs.
Yeah,
that you
yeah.
sit down and they whooshed. He said he threw that, he says, in his truck to
oh
get
goodness.
Rid of everything. So he calls on Monday morning, and of course he got my son, who is in the tick lab. And of course, after Griffin listened to this whole story, he says, well, you know, they don't stay on you, and you didn't have to do any of that because all you had to do was brush them off and they'd have been gone. But the guy said, well, that gives me peace of mind. He says, but I'm still glad I went through all that. So
I understand. I think anybody listening to that would empathize with the whole concept of taking off your... I could see driving home in my undies. You wouldn't have to push me too hard to make that happen.
So,
and,
yeah.
And what must his wife have done? He comes in the house in his underwear.
Yeah, exactly.
That, exactly. Well, dear, you see, I had to burn my clothes.
Yep. So.
That's awesome. What a great story.
Yep.
Oh, goodness. Let's see.
I guess the only other thing we haven't touched on again is this time of year, same thing, mice especially, coming into the house.
Yep.
Big problems, same idea, you know, they're looking for places to get in, and it's back to what we've been saying right along, you know, try to insect-proof and mouse-proof your homes, but you just have to, you know, be on the lookout for them this time of year, you know, and do what you want to do. There's all kinds of different ways to trap them, snap traps, live traps, bucket traps,
yep.
you name it, depending on where they are. I know in the past we've talked about folks getting them in their cars that's parked in their, you know, barn or garage or whatever. And as you have said and others have said, they can do a real number on chewing on wiring and stuff.
Yeah.
So they do a lot of damage. But I've also been getting some calls from several towns of rat problems. And I think part of it was due to allowing chickens and that type of thing.
Oh, yeah.
But that's not the only reason. I mean, you can get bird feeders. People have bird feeders out.
Sure.
So the birds are pretty, you know, flitting all those seeds around.
Yeah.
So mice and rats. And most people have those close to their home.
Mm-hmm.
So I always suggest that probably about this time of year, starting about the mid-September, you might want to stop using your bird feeder. I know people like to feed them all winter long to help them out, which is fine. But this time of year, as the mice are starting to look for places to get warm for the winter too, if they're right next to a feeding station, a bird feeder, and they got an opening to a house, they're going to be back and forth, just supplying their nesting area with birdseed.
Yeah.
So if you don't do that for like this month, that may help keep the rodents from finding your home very attractive.
It reminds me of a house I just saw recently that I looked up at the eave, and you know, it had a cove molding. And there was a gap of maybe an inch, maybe inch and a half. And somebody had applied like hardware cloth over it, the really screen type material with a square that might be almost 7/16 or excuse me, 5/16, 3/8 of an inch square. And I'm looking at that, I'm thinking, now what are we keeping out here? I guess we're keeping out squirrels, but the gap was still, the hole was still there.
Right.
And I understand it's better than nothing. It certainly would keep the squirrels out. But we go back to the same deal about you got weather getting into your structure, as well as heat exiting it. And years ago, and I've told this story multiple times, usually every time I talk to you, at very least, I had a hole like that on the eave of a house up in the air 30 feet, my house when I was on Broadway. And I was walking my dog around the block, and I looked up, and there's a squirrel with his head sticking out of that hole. And I went up and foamed it, because foam is good for everything. And a week later, there's another squirrel who said, oh, yeah, I needed something to exercise my gums. And so I went up again on the ladder with fiberglass and resin and fiber. It wasn't easy to apply, you know, to do wood and make it look right. Fiberglass I could do, excuse me, which solved the issue. But especially as we get into older homes, those areas are going to be there from shrinkage, from weathering. And you don't see them. The critter will find it.
Right.
And Dick Hill had a great saying, and I did a triple take when he said it. He said it on the radio, on the air. A mouse will climb a thermal gradient. Where the hell did that come from? How did he put those words together? And of course, what he meant was a mouse finds that spot of warmth that's coming out of your house through the hole, right. And it's there.
Right.
And that goes for any critter. Small insects or bigger,
right.
They're going to find that hole, and right. That's why you just have to do that study. And the again, the energy audit for that purpose. But also, if you want to do it yourself, they're cheap enough now, and they keep getting cheaper. A thermal imaging camera that plugs into your iPhone or your Android phone, and you can find that spot, especially as we get a little bit cooler weather and the house is heated.
Right.
And you don't have to, you know, be on hands and knees crawling around. It'll show up on a thermal imaging camera. And it's fun. I mean, if you got kids, you need to have that just for their education.
Yeah, right. So, exactly.
As a matter of fact, I found I have one. And I lose track of it all the time. I had it on my banjo bench down in the basement, and I found it yesterday morning. So first thing I did is I came upstairs, and I was thermally scanning the heating system and the chimney. I'd lined my chimneys in the warmer weather. And let's see how that chimney looks now. And you know, it's a great resource, and a family needs one. You don't need to, and not every individual on God's green earth needs a thermal camera. But if a family has one, you can check your kid's house or whatever. And they're probably on eBay used for under $100, I bet.
Wow. Yep.
And it's a great help.
Yep. Yep. And back to plugging holes, and I know you've mentioned this before, is using copper mesh, not steel wool.
Mm-hmm.
Because steel wool disintegrates so quickly once it gets a little wet.
Right.
And it just turns to this rust bucket and it's gone. But the copper mesh is And we recommend that to folks, you know, to keep mice out and stuff so they don't chew on it.
We got an interesting message here. I just bought a camp and noticed under the front door step there were some piles of what looked like sawdust on the ground. Near one corner board, there was some sawdust on the ground. It looked like a tunnel made of sawdust going up the concrete foundation from the ground up to the wood of the structure. Would this be some kind of ant?
It could be, and depending on where they are, if there's actually a structure, the way he made it sound, he could have termites.
Yeah.
Because termites actually make
a tube. Yeah.
From the ground up to the woods. So, and we do have termites in Maine, especially along the coast. So I don't know where this person is located, but I think we've had indications of them inland as far as Winslow. There's been some reports of them. So they're not real common in Maine, but we do have them.
All right. I'm sending the message here to see if find out where he is.
Yeah.
Is Irish Spring soap a good rodent repellent? It smells good.
It smells good. You know, most of those things might work for a while.
Yeah.
But I think that most mammals have a tendency to get used to those type of things. And, you know.
We found, you know, I've seen it online, and we found that peppermint oil works well for deterring rodents. The problem is, it dissipates.
Right.
And so it's better than using mothballs.
Yeah, yes.
smells nothing, better, too. Nothing like breathing paradichlorobenzene yeah. to make you feel good in the morning when you get in the car.
Exactly.
But you certainly don't want to be breathing peppermint oil all the time either. So there's no elegant solution, I think, for mice other than trying to be aware of them. And here's a bit of advice that's easy to deal with for any person who has a car who's worried about this. Don't leave food in your car. Mm-hmm. Clean, you know, the kids are throwing the French fries in the back. Take it from somebody who cleans cars every day of his life. Don't leave food in the car. And if you have kids, you know there's going to be food in the car.
Yes.
And here's another tip. You can pop up the back seat in your car and look underneath, and it's a wonderful experience to see what's underneath there. The termite potential guy, Washington County, right on the salt water.
Yeah, could be
termite.
It's a little further north in the state, but we have had them along the coast, so yeah. it could be.
Yeah.
Or it could be commoner ants, too. I mean,
would they make a tunnel, though?
Well, that's the thing. I don't know what he means by a tunnel. I expect it to be more like, my impression was like a tube.
It says it looked like a tunnel made of sawdust going up the concrete foundation.
Yeah,
that sounds like termites.
Yeah, and they usually make it more from the sand and soil.
Okay.
Because termites actually eat the wood, and they digest it.
Right.
Carpenter ants, they're the ones that makes the sawdust. They chew the wood and spit it out. They're just tunneling in it.
Yeah.
But termites actually feed on the wood. That's why they're worse, or can be worse.
Oh, and anytime you're going to be on the program, I have to address Mrs. Gosey. Any questions for Jim Dill? And if I haven't told her, if I remember to tell her you're going to be on, She'll say, I had a question for Jim. Well, the question is, and this has upset my wife, the cleaning lady, greatly. We had a hummingbird feeder out on the lawn. And apparently that draws, I think it's called a mud wasp. And the mud wasp was building a little mud thing on our front door.
Mm-hmm.
And this just threw her into a tizzy. She's very upset about the mud wasps showing up. Now, they're building a nest to overwinter, I believe, right?
Now, usually what they do is they build their nest early in the spring, and it's there all year long, and they lay their eggs in there, and they develop, and new wasps come out. Then they overwinter as adult and cracks crevices on trees and bark and that type of thing.
So I'm going to say this was August this was happening.
Yep. Still that late.
For overwintering or for?
Okay. No, probably not overwintering.
And, just for a nest.
Just for a nest. They're going to be building all year long.
Well, as the man of the house, I removed them.
Well, yeah, and that's and they're easy to do. And, you know, it's not like a hornet's nest.
No.
You can just knock them down.
There was nothing there.
Right.
They were in the process a couple times. And then I painted the door green just to show them, who's the boss? Don't you build a nest on my white door. Because it's going to be green now, damn it.
Right.
And,
of course, you could have painted it mud color and you never would have noticed.
That's true. Oh, man. All right. We got a couple minutes left. Any last parting thoughts? Anything we want to get out there?
I don't think there's anything that we haven't missed. But as I say, you know, it's just an awareness thing that you really want to try to stay on top of it. And the big thing is when you're trying to do the sealing in cracks and crevices, you really should try to be aware of what you're trying to seal out because you don't want to seal them in.
Mm.
And that's just like when you talked about the squirrels and stuff, if they're in there and they've got young, the young will stay in there. The adults may get out and you say, oh, the adults are out. I'm going to seal it up. Well, if they got three or four babies in there, they're going to die and could be very stinky. So so the best thing, though, as I say, is do this, especially for insects, the small cracks and crevices. Do it during the summer.
Right.
Don't wait until now when you say, uh oh, you know, they're getting in the house, I'm going to go seal it up. Yeah. Well, you're going to
You have guests now for the winter.
Yeah,
but the place to go, everything we've pretty much discussed is online.
Yep.
At Cooperative Pest Management, University of Maine.
Yep. Yep. Our website. Yep.
And you can just Google that and there'll be information there if you need, if you want to send in an insect sample or send in a tick for testing.
Yep.
That the tick lab is, access is right there. Again, Cooperative Pest Management,
yep.
University
Cooperative Extension.
Yep. Cooperative Extension.
Yep. Yep. University of Maine, Cooperative Extension, Pest Management.
There we go.
There you go.
All right. And I guess that's all we got. I've run out of stuff.
Okay.
And
we must be out of time, too, just about.
Yeah, we're just about. We timed it pretty well. I will look forward to talking to you in the spring.
Yep.
When we can discuss all our friends, yeah, that we've talked about getting rid of for the winter that we didn't succeed.
Right.
Coming out in the springtime, wanting to get out.
And then talk stuff like, you know, brown tail moth and all those.
Oh, good. Yeah. All the good things
in the spring.
Yeah. So, and is this an appropriate time? Are there still nests in the trees?
No. Well, right now there are nests. You just can't see them. Once the leaves all fall, because right now they've already fed. The nests are there.
Mm-hmm.
The larvae are in them for the brown tail moth. But it's just so difficult to see with all the leaves. But once the leaves come off, start looking and snip those out as many as you can.
All right. Well, Jim, I appreciate you, as always, taking your time to come in and talk to us. And we will talk to you again in springtime when everything is new and fresh.
There we go. Thanks, okay. Tom.
Thanks, Jim.
Yep. Bye now.
Practicality, D doesn't interest me. Love the life that I lead. I've got a pocket full of miracles. And with a pocket full of miracles, one little miracle a day is all I need. Tea rubbles more or less, B or the me, I guess, when the sun doesn't shine. But there's that pocket full of miracles, and with a pocket full of miracles, the world's a bright and shiny apple that's mine, all mine. I hear sleigh bells ringing smack in the middle of May. I go around like there's snow around. I feel so good, it's Christmas every day. Lee, I've a carousel, fee are as I can tell.